Finding Seguridad, coming up next, right here on The Right Stuff. Showcasing Christian authors from all over the world. England, Canada, India, Thailand, UK, USA. It's Tuesday night, and this is The Right Stuff. With your host, the queen of Tuesday night, Parker J. Cole. Hi, and welcome to another edition of The Right Stuff. I'm the queen, Parker J. Thank you so much for joining me for this show. I'm so excited because this book that we're going to be highlighting today is so relevant to the culture and the times of our current society. People are looking to find books about various narratives of people of color and various minority groups. And what Alison Garcia did in Finding Seguridad is that she takes the plight of these immigrants, Emmanuel, his mother, Anna, and tells us what it means to try to find security, which is finding seguridad. And it really takes us on a roller coaster ride. There's a lot going on in this story, and you are immediately drawn into the plight of these two people. And it lets you know that there is no right or easy way to answer the questions that this book brings up. But I'm probably getting too ahead of myself. I just wanted to give you just a tidbit of what Finding Seguridad is all about. Make sure you go ahead and pick up your copy of Finding Seguridad on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. We definitely want to thank our corporate sponsor, Christian Book Club, for their support. If you, as an author, are interested in learning how to build your readership, go to christianbookclub.net, browse through, and find out how they can help you do exactly that. We also want to thank our partner, Radio App, for partnering with us. Radio App is an app that is solely dedicated to uploading books that are dedicated to the Most High God. And if you want to find out more about how you can get your books uploaded to Radio App, go to radioapp.com. I've been announcing this now for several weeks because I really think that what Radio is doing is a very worthwhile endeavor. And Radio has decided to partner with the Christian Convict Book Club to provide incarcerated men and women in the USA with nonfiction Christian books. Author and founder of the CCBC, Adam Sharp, stated that reading books as he serves time has undoubtedly changed his life. There are numerous testimonies of prisoners who develop relationships with the Most High God after reading life-altering books. And as a corporate contributor, Radio supports this vision and is inviting authors to do the same. So if you are a Christian author who writes nonfiction and you're interested in becoming a part of this initiative that Radio has partnered with the Christian Convict Book Club, go to radioapp.com and find out how you can submit your book for this worthy endeavor and bring light to our brothers and sisters incarcerated in the USA. As always, if you want to weigh in, you certainly can. All you got to do is call in at 646-668-8485, then press 1 to be live on air, or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag right stuff, with your questions or comments. We'll be right back after these messages. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Hi, my name is Kevin Newsom, and I am the host of the Christian Arts and Entertainment Podcast. I am an author, musician, and worship pastor. On my podcast, we talk art and entertainment in all its forms, music, writing, movies, art, and more. Join us each week as we wrestle with two questions. What is a Christian artist's responsibility when creating art? And what is a Christian consumer's responsibility when consuming art? You'll find the Christian Arts and Entertainment Podcast on your favorite podcast platform and in full video on YouTube. Go to www.pressepic.com for more information. Be sure to subscribe on YouTube and in your podcast app, and I'll see you soon.
Christian authors and writers, welcome to Radio. Radio app.
developed exclusively for showcasing Christian fiction and nonfiction ebooks and audiobooks. Tired of book sales plummeting due to algorithm-influenced unrelated classifications? Books lost amongst non-Christian content? Readio allows you to reach your target audience, who's eager to devour your Most High God-inspired books in a variety of Christian subgenres. You write in a niche market. Readio solely caters to it. Follow at Readio App today on social media or visit readioapp.com to know when we are accepting author catalog uploads. Readio, the best app for the Most High influenced ebooks and audiobooks.
We're back with the Queen of Tuesday Night and her guest.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. Again, so very glad you are here with me today. We are talking to my guest co-host and contributor today, Allison Garcia. She is the author of the book Finding Siguri Dodd, which is available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. We talked to Allison last year, and the first book in the series was called Finding Amor. Now we're going into Finding Siguri Dodd. And I like how she's really bringing these all together when it comes to the topic about immigration. Immigration is a hot topic. It's one of those topics that can rip a family apart in the opinion dome of the conversation, but it also has far-reaching context as well. And so Allison is doing something and tackling this particular topic through the vehicle of fiction and letting us know that not every answer is cut and dry and not every solution is easy to come to. But if we understand who's involved in the problem, perhaps we are able to customize the solution. There's a lot going on here in Finding Siguri Dodd, so I'm encouraging you to go ahead and pick up your copy of the book, and then you can discover what it's like to be in the shoes of someone who does not have any security at all and is looking for security. But then again, I may be getting ahead of myself, because I definitely enjoyed this book. So what I'm going to do is invite Allison to come on board. Allison, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I'm really excited to be back.
And thank you so much for your help. You know, we were supposed to do this probably a couple of months back when you sent me the beta read of Finding Siguri Dodd, but I got so busy with my own projects, and I said, you know what, I'm going to have her come back on the show. That's exactly what I said. I said, she'll just have to come back on, because we're going to highlight it anyway, and we know that you're a fantastic author. There are people who just salivate the moment they know that you have another book coming out. They're like, I cannot wait to get another Allison Garcia. So it's really fun to be able to have you back to show your next work in this series. So thank you so much for being with me today.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, people often are salivating for my books, mostly because of my food descriptions, I think. That's usually the kicker right there.
Like, oh my gosh, I can taste this. It's right here. Maybe one of those numbers. Mm-hmm. And I'm a foodie myself, so I totally understand why they may go, I want to read her books because they taste good. I'm sorry, no, they read well. You know, that's what they're saying.
I've gotten so many comments from readers about how they finished my book and like, or they're reading my book and like they had to leave and go get tacos and come back or had to discover
like,
what pupusas
so
were. And
yeah. Like, I'm so hungry right now and it's your fault. And I gained 10 pounds from this book because I had to keep eating while I was reading the story. It's your fault.
Exactly.
But that's okay. Food brings people together, and that's one of the things that we enjoy. I remember I was watching some sort of video or documentary about food and how food often represents the culture, and food represents
yeah.
what happened in that culture. It's actually history and flavor. And with the Hispanic Latino community, that food represents that. And if you look into another culture community, I'm thinking of Vietnamese, I'm thinking Thai, I'm thinking you know, whatever, soul food, like an African-American community, you know, you have this history being told through food. So it's actually a very fascinating topic. Won't get into it today, but it's actually a very fascinating topic, and I hope that one day we'll go ahead and revisit it. But, you know, Alice, it's been about a year since you've been on the show. Besides being affected by 2020, like the rest of us are, how have things been?
Well, it's been an interesting year for sure. I think when I talked to you last time, I was sort of in the midst of my hiatus, and I came back full force about somewhere at the beginning-ish of the pandemic. I wrote another book, Finding POS, actually, November of last year during National Novel Writing Month, or NaNoWriMo, as it's called. And so that's the third book of the series, which I hope to get edited, to start editing next year. And and right now I'm in the middle of another book, which is a spinoff of this book. And I've also gotten a short story into a winter anthology that has just released. And so I'm excited about that. So I've gotten back into my writing life again, to say the least.
It's a good place to be, because when you write, you're able to release that creativity that's within you and then affect change in the world that you exist in. Because a number of people, when they read Spiny Seguridad, they are affected by it. And one young lady, I was reading the reviews, one young lady said, I did not know these things happened to people. And she said, it doesn't matter if you didn't know, it's up to you to make yourself be knowledgeable about it. And I always say ignorance can be fixed. And you're actually talking about, like I said in the introduction to this particular episode, it's a hot topic, immigration. And people are severely divided on it. And then the solutions have not always been the best. And so when you decided that I'm going to continue the story, what were you hoping that readers would pick up in discussing this through the vehicle of fiction?
Yeah, so I feel like God has really called me to write for marginalized Christians, and for me I always go back to the two main tenets, I think, of the faith. Well, I always think back to the verses about Good Samaritan, the parable, you know, where in that one spot where the expert of the law is trying to kind of trick Jesus, but, you know, Jesus is too smart for that. So he's like, well, you know, tell me which are the most important laws? And so Jesus kind of throws it back at him, and he's like, what do you think? And so the expert in the law says the tenets can be, it can be, you know, two things: to love the Lord your God with all your heart and your mind and your soul, and to love your neighbor as yourself. And then he tells the story. And so then the expert of the law says, who is my neighbor? Which is, I think, really what divides us here. That's what you're talking about. The expert says, who is my neighbor? Because he's trying. And then in the Bible, it says, he says, trying to justify himself. And because I think we all want a piece of the pie. That's one of the things that divides us. You know, people sometimes feel like, well, I don't have enough. How am I supposed to give more to somebody that's from a different country or from a different space when I don't have enough to live on and stuff like that? And that's, I think, one of the things that divides people a lot. And so Jesus tells the story of the Good Samaritan, the parable of that, and, you know, where a Samaritan who didn't get along, or the Jewish people and the Samaritans were not, I think it was a Levite, I'm not really sure. Anyway, they were not friends. They would maybe be kind of the equivalent of like America and Mexico, where a lot of times people didn't get along. And yet it's the Samaritan that stops on the side of the road, not the fellow Jews that they walk on by, but it's the Samaritan that stops and says, that picks, you know, heals his wounds. He bandages his wounds. He takes him to the to an inn, and he says, you know, I want a room for this person, and I you know, whatever costs, you know, I'll cover it and I'll come by later and I'll pay it off and keep him here as long as he needs. And so when Jesus asked the expert of the law, who was a neighbor to this person, the expert in the law says, the one who showed mercy. And Jesus says, go and do likewise. And so for me, when I write my books, I keep that in my head. That's like the main thing that drives me, I think, as a person and also as a writer, to think about, you know, to show people, you know, these are your neighbors. These are, everyone is your neighbor. And to be loving and to show someone living their life and yes, they don't have papers and yes, they've been through a lot of things, but these are just people living just like you are living. And I think if you stop and you show mercy and you're kind and you love, and that is truly what God calls us to do. And so my hope when I write these is, one, for people to see themselves in stories, because there's not a lot of Christian fiction that highlights, you know, that has people of color as main characters. And so that's one thing. And then another thing is that I want people, you know, like myself who are white to kind of take a step back and say, hey, you know, this is maybe something I'd never heard of before. Or yes, I forgot about this. It's like, you know, when there's too many, like 2020, there's like too many things going wrong with the world that sometimes you can forget certain struggles because other things come up. And something that was important, you know, 3 months ago or even a week ago, sometimes can fall out of your thoughts. And so it just as a reminder as this is something that is God is calling us to do. And that is my hope.
Now, because I know someone is going to ask this question of themselves and they're going to use a Samaritan story and maybe come back at you with, does that mean I'm supposed to give everything I have and not care for my own self? Mm-hmm. What would you respond to that?
Well, I would say that Jesus says to love your neighbor as yourself, which means you actually, and you can reverse this because I'm a therapist. And so sometimes people give too much and they forget to give to themselves. But Jesus says to love your neighbor as yourself. So you have to love yourself too. And really you have to love yourself. I don't know if you really need to love yourself before you love others, but it really helps because otherwise you run out of steam. So I don't think it says to, in that passage at least, to give everything. There's other passages I think that say that maybe. But you know, to love someone as much as you love yourself, to not put yourself above others. And, you know, if it's as yourself, which is like an equal statement, then it's not to put others above yourself either. You know, to kind of, I would say, be kind to yourself and to others. And the way to do that is to remind yourself about how much God loves you. I think that's, for me, that's where it starts. When I kind of realized in my faith journey how much God loves me, which you can't really even fathom, you know, that's when I felt like I was able to start loving other people more and even loving myself more.
One thing that I noticed in this book was you let us know that at the beginning of the story, there are two immigrants fighting against the system. But you also start to layer it down. And the way you layer it down is letting us know how domestic violence affected both of these people, the child and his mom. And There was a term I was not familiar with until recently, or if I heard it before, I just never caught on it. And that term was adverse childhood experiences. And so I want you to go into depth about this because some people call it ACEs. And when I think of ACEs, I think of cards, which is, you know, go figure. Right? But you talk about adverse childhood experiences. So go into depth what this means, because it's not just one thing. It's many things and how that affects the mentality of a child. So go ahead and just give us, if you can, the truncated version. I know you're a therapist. You could probably go 3 hours on it, but give the truncated version, if you will.
Yeah, the theory of ACE, which is adverse childhood experiences, is a trauma-based theory, and it talks about how different experiences that you might have in your childhood could either give you resilience factors or give you the adverse childhood experiences would be like things that make you have more struggles. So, for example, growing up with domestic violence would be a like an adverse childhood experience or an ACE, while, you know, living in, you know, maybe like a suburbs, the suburbs would be maybe like a resilience factor, or going to, you know, having somebody help you with your homework, you know, like a tutor or something could be like something that would help you build resilience, or having that one person who loves you. So you can have a lot of adverse childhood experiences, and yet if you have a lot of resilience factors, because, you know, sometimes there's things that we can't control. Like if you, I mean, I'm just thinking right now, like I, like, and like just being a white person in America, I have all extra privileges just being born into it like that. And so, you know, there's certain things, or maybe if somebody grew up, you know, in a low-income neighborhood, or maybe grew up with a single parent or something like that, you know, can't really fix, but you can add on resilience factors. You know, you can, if that single parent, you know, is loving and, you know, devoted to you, you can still, like, that's a resilience factor right there. If you've got a grandma, you know, or someone, you know, or like an auntie or somebody that's like in your corner, somebody that listens, or a teacher, you know, anybody that is there for you, like that builds resilience for you. And part of it when you're growing up, and kind of what Sandra, the grandmother of Emmanuel, you know, helps him start working with his PTSD is building up resilience factors. What are some ways to build resilience in your life? Because those are things that you can learn and take on. And for Emmanuel, you know, he does have some resilience factors. One, you know, he has Mamita, who is his great grandmother back in El Salvador. I don't want to imagine a world where Emmanuel and Anna didn't have Mamita growing up, because that would have been a very sad world. And there are people that don't have Mamitas or in their lives, and that makes it a lot harder to deal with life. But Mamita, who is like this sweet, you know, great grandmother to Emmanuel and grandmother to Anna, you know, is their mother figure, is like the one that's there for them and kind of shields them to the best of her ability from the dangers of things. And so I kind of, when I think about ACE, I also think about resilience. And so without really thinking about that, that was in the story, but yeah, I think sometimes people just have a lot of different adverse childhood experiences, and it makes growing up really challenging. And I was glad to hear from some people that have, either complex PTSD or childhood PTSD, that the way Emmanuel was reacting and some of the ways that he was responding were ringing true for them and felt familiar, even though they felt hard.
And we're talking today to Allison Garcia. She is the author of the book Finding Seguridad. It's available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. When we come back, we'll be talking more about this wonderful book, as well as some more in-depth insight into some of the complexities that surround the social issues that she is expanding on through the vehicle of fiction. You're welcome to join in the conversation at 646-668-8485 or press 1 to be live on there. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
God gives humans the gift of making amazing stories to glorify Him. At SpeculativeFaith.com, our ministry is to help fans explore fantasy, science fiction, supernatural stories, and beyond from an intentional and biblical Christian perspective. We share daily articles and have extensive archives tackling hot topics like end times beliefs, the art of writing, creative excellence in the Christian subcultures, discernment, sex, magic, Harry Potter, and space aliens and the Bible. If you are a parent or anyone else with a discriminating palate, our reviewers explore fantastical novels, movies, television, and games in light of God's beauty, goodness, and truth. Want to find Christian stories? The Specfaith Library lists every fantastical novel we can find from a Christian author. It's all part of our mission to discern, engage, and enjoy fantastical human creativity in honor of our Creator, Jesus Christ. SpeculativeFaith.com, exploring fantastical stories for God's glory.
Engaging the culture's imagination through speculative fiction, the Untold Podcast produces audio fiction from a Christian worldview. Find us over at untoldpodcast.com, where we partner with authors to tell science fiction, fantasy, supernatural, and horror stories. Find links at untoldpodcast.com to subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, and a variety of other platforms. Each month we produce high-quality audio fiction that's free to download and free to listen. Our submissions are open, and we're always looking to add another great story to over 24 hours of narrative entertainment. Find all of our audio fiction over at www.untoldpodcast.com.
The Speculative Fiction Cantina is your weekly hypodermic injection of science fiction, fantasy, horror, alternate history, and things weird and wonderful in the world of books and writers. You'll hear from writers who bend the rules and drive the narrative. We ask authors the hard questions. We do the show in our pajamas. Join S. Evan Townsend on this journey over the rainbow and through the looking glass. The Speculative Fiction Cantina on Rightstream Radio every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern.
We're back with the Queen of Tuesday Night and her guest.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. The Queen here. We're talking to my guest co-host and contributor today, Allison Garcia. She is the author of the book, Finding Seguridad. It's available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. What Allison is doing is taking on the hot topics of today by using her fiction to showcase marginalized Christians who fall in many different subcategories of identity, whether you're a person of color, whether you're immigrants, things of that nature. So she's using that ability that God has given her to show and spotlight certain things that happen within some of these identity sets. And I'm really glad, Allison, that God has called you to this, because you really do have a heart to serve marginalized communities. And I think that's important as we talk about these issues, such as immigration, such as cultural racism and things of that nature. So thank you so much for using the gift God gave you to go ahead and talk about these. Now, we were talking about before the break about how adverse childhood experiences can affect a person's mental and emotional state with PTSD. Now, in Finding Seguridad, we have a mother and her son who are the victims of domestic violence. And one thing about domestic violence is that it supersedes culture. There are people of every culture who experience domestic violence. And I think this was a very pointed way for you to show that people are not labels, that they need help. And you use that in this book, Finding Seguridad. So tell us a little bit about the process behind using domestic violence as that line of relatability with the reader.
I think for me, I work in as a therapist, and so I work with so many people that have grown up around domestic violence, who have experienced it themselves. And when I wrote the book in 2014, the first draft, I had a different ending. I don't know if I had talked about that last time, but I had a different ending that didn't quite sit right with me, and so my first draft, I set it to the side for about, I think, like 4 years. And when I brought it back again, I had prayed about it, and God gave me a different idea for the way the story to go. And then I got an idea for this 3-book series. And for me, I think, you know, I see it so much, and it's so prevalent. And I kind of wanted to show people that you could you know, leave a bad situation, that it was okay to do that, that sometimes that's the safest way to be, because it's a very, it can be very dangerous, deadly situation. It's the number of homicides for domestic violence are, it's like the number one cause of domestic homicides is intimate partner violence. So it's a scary situation. And so I wanted to highlight that. And I was at a book group talking one day about finding amor, and they asked me, I guess, a question about Carlos, who is the boyfriend of Anna, who's you know, the perpetrator of the domestic violence. And they were like, what made you make him like this? And I was like, huh, because that's a really good question. And I was experiencing it as well myself as I was writing Finding Seguridad and having slowly been deciding to leave my own domestic violence situation with my ex-husband, and realizing that some of the things were for me, it was more like emotional abuse. But I think there was a lot of me in there that I didn't even know. And I think that God does that. He works in mysterious ways. And for me, as I was editing and writing these scenes about Anna leaving and getting help, for me, it kind of opened my own eyes to be like, I'm in a situation that's bad, just like Anna. And, you know, this way I'm being treated or talked to, and, you know, it is not okay. And I think for me, I think it was a part of my healing process and part of my finding my own safety, my own seguridad, with all of the things that, you know, I had going on in my life, which is one of the reasons I took my hiatus to kind of get my life back together. So I think I went into it just because it was something I'd heard a lot of, and just wanting to highlight that. And when but it kind of morphed on its own without me realizing it. And because I am what we call in NaNoWriMo a pantser, which is I write by the seat of my pants. So, I often feel like God really kind of writes through me, because sometimes I'll go back and I don't remember scenes that I wrote. Like, I know I wrote them. I must have written them, you know, but I'm like, wow, that's really good. I think that was God inspired. So I think for me, yeah, I guess it was just part of my own process, and maybe part of my own kind of realization of my situation.
And there's nothing wrong with being open and transparent about that. I know I had a young lady on the show some time ago, and one of the things that she mentioned the fact that if you don't get out of that situation, you're doing a disservice to yourself, but you're also affecting your children. And you are altering their lives if you don't get out of that situation. And yeah. In this case, Emmanuel is affected by that. Yes, there are many reasons behind it, we understand, but Emmanuel is affected by that. So tell us, what are some of the things that happened to Emmanuel as a product of domestic violence?
Well, I think, you know, for him in the story, it kind of is a continuation, because he experiences domestic violence or abuse from his tío and tía, his uncle and aunt, in El Salvador. And so when he meets Carlos, he's very wary, and things go well for a bit, which is generally the case, and then start to kind of unravel. And so he gets kind of torn down emotionally by Carlos, called names. There's yelling, there's, you know, this just general fear, like kind of threatening atmosphere. Plus Carlos drinks a lot as well. But one of the things I wanted to highlight in Finding Seguridad as well is that stopping drinking doesn't just stop domestic violence, because it's not about the alcohol. Alcohol does, I mean, you know, in especially in an abusing of alcohol situation, will enhance certain things that are kind of already inside you. So it's not, I was very particular when I wrote some of the scenes in Finding Seguridad where Carlos goes and kind of flips out, that he wasn't under the influence at all. Because yes, it can make it worse. But it's not the cause of it. And I think sometimes people think, oh, well, as long as this person stops drinking, or as long as they don't drink, or as long as they don't use or something like that, like it'll be fine. But really, there are, maybe that's when they get violent, but there's always this underlying kind of thing that the person who is the abuser needs very intensive therapy to kind of get through, generally speaking. And so I tried to put some of that out, like, throughout the book. And Emmanuel, you know, he's very jumpy. He gets, this part of the book, it's the after effects. You know, he's afraid. He hears Carlos's voice, and he cowers, hiding under a blanket. He doesn't want to talk about it. He doesn't want to think about it. He gets shaky when he starts thinking or talking about it, sweating. He has flashbacks. He has nightmares. And those are some of the things that happen when you're in a domestic violence, you're witnessing domestic violence.
So let's shift the conversation a little bit, because we talked a lot about Emmanuel, Anna, and what they're dealing with. Now I want to shift the conversation to Lauren and Peter. And mm-hmm. one of the things that they start to realize is there is a different story than the one they've been told. And this mm-hmm. really is ripped out of the headlines of our time. And even for me, and I don't really go into it a lot because I have different viewpoints about different things, but I remember when the George Floyd protests began, that swept a huge wave of conversation and protests, things of that nature. People started to reach out to me as an African-American author, and I felt a little mixed about it. And one of the reasons why I felt mixed about it was because what was I yesterday, and then what was I today? And mm-hmm. yesterday I was a human being, and today I'm a human being. But because I was an African-American, suddenly I became on your radar. And before that, I was just a person. Now all of a sudden I'm African-American. And mm-hmm. I had very mixed feelings about it. But there were people who I spoke to, they were authors too, that said, I really did not know that this was going on. And I said, the people have been speaking about these things for many years. And one guy mm-hmm. said, I just didn't know. And that is something that I was telling someone else. Ignorance can be fixed. It really mm-hmm. can. It's willful ignorance. That's the difference. If you didn't know, you didn't know. And some people get really frustrated and say, but what have people been saying about this for all these years? And I said, it doesn't matter if you are in a bubble, let's say. So when Peter and Lauren are starting to discover that there's a different narrative than the one they've been told, it's almost, and correct me where I'm wrong, it's almost a PTSD thing for them, because they are faced with a reality crumbling around them and a new one making its appearance. So tell us a little bit about that and what you hope readers take from exploring it from that standpoint.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, for me, the story of Lauren and Peter kind of realizing about systemic racism was very personal, because I think I had like a very similar experience, because I feel like your eyes are, it's kind of hard to explain almost. But as a white person in America, there's a lot of things that you don't experience and you don't see. And if you aren't around a lot of people of color and you don't talk to people of color that much, you can totally miss these things. You can live a whole life and never know that these things are happening, which is very sad, because then you don't understand other people's narrative sometimes, you know. And for me, as I was, you know, same thing with Lauren and Peter, they're starting to be around more people that are different than them, which is different for Lauren. And she's learning, she's talking, she's meeting people. And then she starts to see that they're having some different experiences than she's having, especially when Emmanuel and Anna are living in her house. And she's, you know, she's out in public with them and kind of sees some of the ways that they're being treated. Plus, she is starting to read some books and open her eyes to things. And for me, as I was reading those same books and opening my eyes on things, and that's been for me, like for her, it's like a abbreviated journey because, you know, I only have a certain number of pages. But for me, it's been, you know, 10, 15 years of kind of slowly uncovering this. And I do feel like it's very unsettling. And I feel like the more you learn and the more you hear, the more unsettling it is. I took a course on racial equity, that was very good. I feel like it was a 2-day course, and they went through the history of inequality and racial injustice in America, and the very very, I'm not sure the word I want, but very intense, like very intentionality of the choices that were made in the law and in many corporations and in the government to create this inequality was really disturbing to me, unsettling on a very deep level. And I read the book Plantation Jesus, which was extra unsettling because seeing how it was perpetrated within the church, and how unloving and how dehumanizing it was something that struck me. And to see it happening again and again and again, and to watch videos of people being, you know, yelled at and, you know, and things like that, which I've realized, you know, is not an everyday experience, but it has, you know, people talk about having experiences like that often and not really being surprised by those things. And it's just, for me, it's been like the more that I've learned, and I think this is what happens with Lauren and Peter in the story too, the more they see, the more unsettling it is. And they're like, how could people be living in this whole reality that we have missed for all these years? And how sad of it is to know that people are struggling right next to you, and you just don't know it, or people are being mistreated right next to you, or that you are, unbeknownst to you, you know, because you are in the system, the very system of systemic racism, you know, you are like unwilling, like participants in the system, you know, sometimes. And it's just very unsettling. And so I tried to capture that in Lauren and Peter's story and questioning. For me, it made me like really question things like, you know, who are we as a country? Like I remember growing up and thinking, oh, America's great, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm like, you know, this is a lot of not great things that we've done throughout the years. And, you know, it really makes you step back and take stock in everything. So I hope to capture that. And I hoped to also encourage people to go and look things up on their own and read things on their own. And I know just in my own life, my mom proofread my book. And then she went out and she got several of the books that I had mentioned in the book, and she started reading them. And I think she's read more than I have at this point. You know, she just really, I guess, started learning about it. And I'm guessing wasn't really something on her radar before. So that was one of my hopes for writing it like this.
I guess my question would be too, is, and I know people have asked me this, and I've had lots of conversations with many different people on both sides of the equation. And some people would say, I did not personally do something to another group. I did not personally own slaves. I did not personally take from the Native Americans. I did not personally do whatever, put X there. And I agree with that. I totally agree with that. No big deal. You know what I mean? I totally agree. You did not personally deal with that. But do you think that if, even though you didn't personally have anything to do with it, do you think it's just being aware that these things are happening is what's important so you can make a stand on legislation or you can make a stand on certain laws? Because I would want, because I'm always about moving forward, because we have all this dark past. Do we stay in the past? Or do we move forward? Because if we all stay in the past and we're just stuck here, no one's moving anywhere, you know? And I think about myself, like, I would hate to be reminded about something that happened 12 years ago that I did, and I'm constantly reminded about it. And so what, and I know I've been asked these questions myself. So how would you respond to something like this? I know we kind of get a little bit off track, so I hope you don't mind. I know we get a little bit off track.
I love this stuff.
Okay.
No,
but
I love talking about this stuff. Yeah.
Good. So I want to just have that, because I know there are opponents to certain things, which is fine. I think dialogue is great. If you don't have dialogue, you don't really exercise your critical thinking skills. So tell me, how would you respond to that?
Well, I would say that that you can't really work on a problem if you can't see the problem. So the first step is awareness, because I mean, yes, I mean, you can say, oh, you know, I've never owned a slave. I know I've never owned a slave. And yet, you know, I could stay there and I could not grow and I could not learn more. And I could say, nope, I'm not going to read anymore. And that's it, you know. But that would be a big disservice, because if you, I mean, if, especially as a Christian, if your brothers and sisters are crying out, you know, and which is literally what's happening with the Black Lives Matter movement, literally crying out and saying, this is happening again and again and again and again and again, please do something. And you turn a blind eye to that. I mean, there are a host of verses in the Bible that say that turning a blind eye to your, you know, your brother or sister in pain, is not something God wants. So I think as a Christian, learning more and awakening, you know, having that awakening, I know, like, you know, people call it being woke, you know, which is kind of what it feels like, because it feels like you're asleep and then all of a sudden you've awoken to this new reality and you're like, ah, you know, oh my gosh, all this stuff is happening. And so for me, it's being aware, but that's not the only step. There, because yes, you can, I mean, you could be, you know, sitting in a kitchen that's on fire and you could be like, wow, it's really hot in here. It's on fire. That's not good. We really should do something about it. But if you just keep sitting in the kitchen on fire, you know, it's not going to go well after a while. So you need to take action. And we were talking at my church the other day about how love is an action. Love as a verb is what they said. And I thought that was great, because, you know, you can't just be aware. You have to also take action to make change. And what that means is going to mean different things to different people. There's some people that are, you know, want to go and participate in protests. You know, and there's other people that write books about it, like I do. There's other people that donate money. There's other people that, you know, go and be part of the government so they can be part of the change. There's other people that will, you know, there's a host of things you can do, to make change in this realm. And I think awareness is the first step. Because, I mean, just by reading the statistics, right now, I took another racial equity course not that long ago, about being, I think it was about how, like, about being an anti-racist. And I took that, like, sometime during the pandemic. And I talked about the fact that there is more unequal now than it was in the 60s. And knowing that, so when you think about you know, oh, it's in the past. It's not in the past. It's in the present. You know, this, and I think I have to remind myself too that these videos that keep coming up on Facebook with people being mistreated, people of color being mistreated in the community. In my head, I'm just like, wow, that's happening a lot. You know, I'm seeing a lot of these videos, but really it's those things have been happening for ever. It's just that people didn't have a way to get it out there. And now there's, you know, Facebook Live and different things where you can capture it in the moment and say, no, this is what's really happening. And so if you stop and you look at things and you read and you talk to people, it's very hard not to be aware of what's going on. And yet some people, like you said, willful ignorance, some people refuse to look at it. And a lot of times that's because of fear, anger or hatred. And as a Christian, I know that I'm called to love and to love my neighbor as myself. And so if I see my neighbor is, you know, I know my neighbor of color is not getting the same kind of treatment. I want to do things so that they can move towards that. So that, not that like they need to do things different. We need to do, like, as a white person, I need to do things different. And as a system, as a, you know, in the government, things need to be different.
So we are literally at the top of the hour here, just about, and I did not know the time went that fast. So
it did go fast.
I had no idea it went that fast. I wanted you to read an excerpt from the book. So what I'm going to do is have you do that real quick so we can get just a taste of your writing. And for those of you who want to pick up your copy of Finding Seguridad, and I know I'm saying that wrong because you say it better, but if you want to pick up your copy, go ahead and go to Amazon.com. So right now I'm going to mute myself so you can go ahead and read that excerpt right now.
Okay. This is from the first chapter of Finding Seguridad. Fear gripped 8-year-old Emmanuel Martinez's heart as he and his mother ran down the hill from their trailer towards Dove Peak Presbyterian Church in Leederville, Virginia. The late afternoon sun sent long shadows in front of them as they flew through the rugged, half-frozen terrain. His thoughts flew as fast as his feet. He tried to understand all that had happened in the last half hour. The day had started wonderfully. He and Mama had attended Dove Peak's Spanish-speaking POS service for the first time. He'd made new friends, eaten a delicious lunch, and enjoyed an exciting game of football. That all changed when they'd arrived back home and realized Don Carlos, his mother's boyfriend, had trashed the place and disappeared. Broken chairs, shattered bottles of tequila, wine, and beer were strewn across the living room, and half-eaten food with cucarachas spotted the floor. Emmanuel had almost been able to feel the rage through the chaos. He was glad Don Carlos wasn't there. Emmanuel kept running, his stomach squeezing, his lungs burning from the cold December air. If only they hadn't stopped to gather their belongings. The violent mess in their trailer had made Mama freeze. Emmanuel had shaken her out of it and urged her to pack fast, telling her that Don Carlos would be back soon and that he'd be violent and dangerous than he had been. Before they'd been able to flee, Don Carlos had flown in like a tornado of anger. Emmanuel had stayed hidden in his room, afraid of the mad screaming Don Carlos. Emmanuel had heard a loud thump and Mama began crying. Emmanuel had crept down the hall towards the noise. Don Carlos bent over Mama, his black hair wild, wooden cutting board held high, swaying in the way he only did when he was dead drunk. The thick, heavy board would hurt her, probably kill her, if Don Carlos used it. Emmanuel had charged into the room, picked up the first thing he could find, and hit Don Carlos over the head with a wine bottle. A sickening thud sounded as the bottle made contact with Don Carlos's head, and a dark-tinted liquid spilled onto their living room carpet. The memory sent Emmanuel to his knees near the church parking lot, and he threw up his lunch. Ay, mijo, his mother rubbed his back. The floral scent of her shampoo calmed him for a moment. ¿Estás bien? Emmanuel wiped his mouth and stood on wobbly legs. He looked over his shoulder, feeling the trailers closing in on them. Any minute now, Don Carlos could come barreling down the hill. Emmanuel adjusted his backpack and put his hand in hers. Vámonos, he said.
And that was an excerpt from Finding Seguridad. It's available on Amazon.com. I really appreciate the conversation today, Allison. We hit on some really hard topics. I know our listeners may have a different viewpoint, and that is definitely okay. And I have always said that on this show, if we do not have dialogue, how do we know where we stand is the truth? If you don't have these difficult conversations, how do you increase your critical thinking skills and are able to navigate the world around you? And that's why I was so thankful that you came on board with us today, Allison, to talk about this and to talk about it from the immigration standpoint. And I'm sure there are other authors out there who have a different standpoint. They want to talk about it. And for those of you who disagree, guess what? It is okay. I can't stress that enough. I'm not one of those people, Allison, where you have to agree with everything I say. I have never mm-hmm. been that type of person, never. And I have people on both sides, here in the U.S., I should say, I have people on both sides of the political spectrum, and we get along just fine. So it's fine. Mm-hmm. It's okay for me. And so, Allison, what's so heartening about what you're doing is that there are authors out there who are listening who say, you know what, I want to do what Allison is doing. And this show is always about helping people to pick up the pen and write. So in the few moments mm-hmm. we have left, go ahead and encourage them out there today.
Well, I think if you have a story in your heart or something that you feel is burning inside you and needs to get out, write it. Write it down. Take the time to sit down and write it. For me, I think God had calls us to do different things in life, and maybe yours is writing, maybe it's not. But when I know for me that that's one of the things God has called me to do. And so even though it's hard and I'm tired and I don't feel like waking up at 5 a.m. and writing all my words while I have my child and my job, my 9-to-5 job, you know, I still do it because, and even though it might not sell that many books, I still do it because I feel like if there's even one person out there that I touch, that one person that my book calls to and makes a difference in their life, that is worth all of those hours that I spent, you know, waking up early and doing things for, because that's what God calls us to do. He calls us to love in the whatever way we can. And this for me is an act of love. And so do what you feel like God's calling you to do. Write the words if that's what you're feeling called to do. Put them on the page. Don't stop writing, even when you think people will judge you or people won't like what you wrote. Write what's in your heart and be loving and love others, and that will get you far.
As I like to say, write the words, all the words. I say that all the time when I'm encouraging my author friends, because if you don't write the words, all of them, then you won't finish that story. And it doesn't matter how you get it done. It doesn't matter how long it takes, as long as you pick up the pen and write stuff. Mm-hmm. Allison, where can we find you online?
Well, I'm in several different places. I have a Facebook author page, which is Allison K. Garcia. And I'm also on Instagram under that same handle, Allison K. Garcia. Plus, you can find me on Twitter under @athewriter. And I have my own Amazon page as well with my various and sundry books. And I have a new one coming out any day now. I think it's actually available on ebook right now, I'm in a winter anthology called The Heart of the Season, an ATA winter anthology, I think. It just came out today. I don't have the whole title memorized, but you can find that on Amazon as well. It's on Lulu right now, but it's going to be on Amazon soon. So those are the main places where you can find me. I also have a newsletter that you can find by going to my Amazon author page or also my Facebook page.
Allison, thank you, thank you. Thank you so much for being with us on the show today. Always enjoy having you, and I cannot wait to have you back and have you back soon.
Oh, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed it. I very much loved being on your show again. Thank you so much.
And we were talking today to Allison Garcia. She is the author of the book Finding Seguridad. It's available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. Make sure you go ahead and pick up your copy today. As you can tell, Allison definitely has a heart to address the issues of today, and that's talking about racism, immigration, all sorts of inequalities that we have in our society. And this may also resonate with you. So go ahead, pick up her book and see how she does it. And then maybe you can do it differently, or maybe you may do it in the same way. It doesn't matter if God has given you the gift to write. And these are things that are important to you. Go ahead and do what he has called you to do. Thank you so much for joining me for this edition of The Right Stuff. I'm the queen of Tuesday nights, Parker J, and you have a wonderful, absolutely glorious, blessed day.